Yes, indeed. You are listening to the Empower Hour here on Charity Radio. Special guest in the studio tonight is Miss Deborah Byrne from DB Psychologies. She's travelled all the way up. She's doing from Wexford. She's doing a double whammy here. She's with my friend Alan from Compass Media earlier in Montrose, and she's very kindly joined me this evening. Deborah is the author of the book Building Blocks to Self-Care, and self-care will be the topic for us tonight. We'll be right back after this. That's the sound of Jim Curran's Simple Minds, one of my favourite bands during the 80s, and I wasn't alone. Now, as I was saying earlier, we have in the studio with us Deborah Byrne from DB Psychologies. That's your Twitter handle.
It is, and my Facebook handle.
And that's where people can get you.
It is, exactly. Or on Instagram, it's DB Psychologies as well.
Brilliant. Now, tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
I'm a psychologist, mm-hmm. and I decided to become a psychologist after my son, my second eldest son, Adam, was diagnosed with dyslexia. And I realised that there weren't enough psychologists in Ireland. And I got involved with the Dyslexic Association, and I set up a branch and a workshop for the County Wicklow. And I ran that for a long time, and I set up a helpline for parents, and I trained to become a psychologist, and I did a lot of work with parents, and I realised that it wasn't just about the cognitive effects of dyslexia. They needed other help, and this is why I set up that hotline, and they were able to phone me and talk to somebody that had experienced what they had experienced, and that started me on the path towards where I am today.
Right. Okay, so you have your psychology.
Yeah.
You've got more than that, which is more important, your experience.
Exactly, yes. I have a lot of experience working with families and disabilities, working with individuals, and with regards to addiction and PTSD and postnatal depression. And that's one of the areas I'm really now passionate about, is postnatal depression in men, and right. trying to highlight that on Twitter, on PND Daddies on a Monday night. So you'll find me there on Monday night. But you'll also find me on Able Hour with Colette, mm-hmm. promoting disabilities, and on Mental Health Hour on a Sunday night with the two ladies, beautiful ladies that host Mental Health Hour on Sunday nights.
Yes, indeed. And Danielle Serpico, our very own Danielle Serpico, was...
That's right. She had a wonderful talk last night, yes. With Sensational Kids. And I thought it was just fabulous to hear that passion from that mother and a dynamic woman coming across, saying that, you know, I saw this need and I stepped in and I started this organisation for children and to help their families and help them. And that's what I basically did. I could hear myself many years ago when I heard about, you know, dyslexia at first thing. Teachers didn't know. So I organised trainings for them. I organised parent trainings. And I could see myself years ago in this woman now talking last night with Daniela.
With the same passion, yes.
And yeah. It was wonderful to hear.
And why do you think there is this gap? I mean, how were these people not being supported? Was everybody kind of looking, going, oh, somebody else will do it?
I think with any sort of mental health or disability, I think there is a huge gap within the education system and in the health system, unfortunately, in this country. And not just in this country, because I did a lot of my training in the UK, so... It's there as well. And we need to support our families. You know, we're not going to take the chance. This is the way I looked at it. I wasn't going to take the chance that my son wouldn't get a teacher or wouldn't get the help that he needed. So this is why I stepped up. And I'm sure this is why, and what I listened to last night was the same thing coming across all these years later, was coming across from this woman that said, my child needed this, but also there were other children who needed it. Mm-hmm. And this is where I come from, is that I try to make things as practical as possible. I like to get down into the coal face. I like to meet people face to face. I like to help them as much as I can. That is, you know, that is my basis of who I am and where I come from.
Excellent. So this really then is where you now see the book that you've written?
The book that I've written is from my own experiences. Mm. A number of years ago, I suffered from PTSD. And in order to get better, I went to a therapist, a wonderful therapist who is called Therese Hicks. She's now launched a book called The Spirituality, A User's Guide. And Therese is an American therapist. And she, luckily enough, she was working in Ireland. And I went to work with her on my PTSD, and it was my journey through that. And I realized I didn't know what self-care was. And it was my journey of building those steps, what I needed to do first, which was, she started me off using mindfulness, and we tackled sleep and self-care. So self-care just isn't about the basics. I do cover the basics of self-care in the book, but that isn't until chapter 3. Self-care is a whole lot more than just getting up out of bed, showering, you know, eating 3 meals a day, exercising, doing your mindfulness or a meditation or some form of relaxation, looking after your sleep. It's so much more than that. And this is why I see it as the building blocks for people that have got to a stage in their lives where they're saying, okay, there's a problem here or something's wrong, I need a little bit of help. And then they're realizing that their very foundations of their lives have holes in them. So think about it as a house that you want to build up from the foundations up again. You want to reinforce the foundations. Mm-hmm. And then you go from there and build up until you can take flight. That's so the way I look at it. You know, you take flight and live the life you want.
Okay. So you can't, I mean, you can't have a strong push off without a solid foundation.
Exactly.
Basically.
You can't. You can't have a, you know, you can't just keep going the way you are if you're in that much pain or if you are burnt out, have high stress levels. I think it comes to a point where you need to see somebody, you need to ask for help. And that takes a huge amount of courage.
So would it be fair to say that people are calling self-maintenance self-care, where they're just maintaining their bodies?
I think they are. I think it's because even within the mental health profession, we ourselves haven't defined self-care. It's too big a term. I think it's like anything in the joke around psychology and psychiatrists and therapists is put us all in a room and ask us to define the word normal and watch us sweat. Because we can't give you a definition of normal. There is no normal. Everybody is just different. We're just different. We're just different individual people. And that is who we are. It's part of being a human. It's part of being our, you know, our humanity. Yeah. It's to be different and to learn differently. And I love that. I just love that about people and meeting them and, you know.
Yeah. Well, of course, it's convenient and easy if we have a definition for normal to pigeonhole somebody and treat them in such a way.
It is. And I suppose I've had this conversation earlier today with somebody about labelling. And I understand labelling. Yes, we do need labels. Somebody is dyslexic. Somebody is Asperger. Somebody has X disability. I can understand that. And that is to get the services they require. But it shouldn't pigeonhole them. It shouldn't be just who they are. They're also a human being. There's so much more than their disability. There's so much more than your PTSD. You're so much more than borderline personality disorder. You're so much more than postnatal depression. You're so much more than that. It's just one aspect of your life.
It reminds me of the Zen teaching about the teacher who draws a dot on a wall and asks his students, what do they see? And they say, oh, I see the dot on the wall. And he goes, does nobody see the wall? That everyone is just so focused on this particular thing, this particular attribute,
that they don't see outside the box. Yeah, you don't see the bigger picture.
Okay, we take a quick tune. We'll play this Move to Memphis for your
for Mary,
and we'll be right back after this.
Memphis. It's great hanging out with you guys. We're all such good mates.
Yeah. I love how we can talk to each other about our problems and not bottle anything up.
Hey, speaking of bottle, you want a bit of this noggin?
No thanks, Dave. I'm okay.
Go on. Have some, you big wuss.
Hey, John, easy. If Chris doesn't want to drink, that's fine. It's his choice to make.
Sorry, Chris. I should completely respect that.
Hey, man, it's cool.
Things are only perfect in advertising. In real life, people aren't always perfect. And if you've got a problem, it's how you sort it out that counts. Go to reachout.com to see how you can help yourself through your tough times. If something's on your mind, just reachout.com.
Yeah, welcome back to Charity Radio. Here in the studio, I have Deborah Byrne here of Deborah Byrne Psychology Services. Thank you very much for joining us in. We'd like to have a special shout out to Eilish McCormack Kelly there, who has done a beautiful job on my type-in. Everybody's admiring it. Also to Mary Hughes and also to Michelle Waldron of First Early Education. Now, we are talking about self-care, and the author of self-care here in the studio with me is Deborah Byrne. Now, Deborah, the book itself is... It's a 12-month book. Perhaps you could...
It's a 12-month book, yes, and that may seem a lot for people. In fact, it's a 12-month course. So with the book, you would have a Facebook group that you can come on and have the support of everybody else and me for an entire year. And we would work through each chapter. It's 12 chapters. So we would work through each chapter 1 month at a time in order for to give yourself time to build up the routine, to put in place self-care activities that can help you. And we start at the very foundation, where I feel is relaxation and or meditation or mindfulness, whichever you want to pick. And then we will work through getting your sleep right. And then we will move on to basics of self-care and self-soothing. And we will talk then about questions. We will have a self-care questionnaire, which I do. And it looks at your whole life, where you're at. What do you want to change? What do you want to achieve? Now, we don't do goal setting until right towards the end, because I don't want to have that pressure put on people. I really want to get down to the nitty gritty, really, and get them to explore negative talk, positive talk, negative people in their lives. So eliminating, you know, if they have to eliminate somebody from their lives, that takes time. Or to cut back on interacting with those people, even sometimes if it's family, it's harder, or somebody at work, it's harder.
Yeah.
So to have that time to do those things, to take it one step at a time, not at a fast pace. Of course, people can just buy the book and just off they go and do their own thing and do it in 12 weeks if they feel. But I really feel if they wanted to get the benefit from it, they would take their time and do it over the 12 months. It incorporates a planner, so you would, and a journal, and you would take your time. You would learn to journal every day, and gratitude, and you would learn to plan in your time. For me, time out is the first thing. Every week, I will plan. Mm-hmm. I will, you know, if I'm working tonight, I'm working late with you. I'm here. This to me, it's work. Tomorrow morning is my time. I will take time off because I know in the morning I will be tired. So it's not a good time for me to see a client. This is what you have to do. You have to learn to take time out for yourself and that it's okay and not feel guilty about it. I think that's a huge thing. I don't think it's just a mummy's thing or a woman's thing. I think men are guilty of that too, that it's taking time for me. What do I want? What do I really want in life? And where am I at? And, you know...
It's kind of a self-audit.
It is a self-audit. We do a self-audit around month five and again towards the end. And hopefully by then you'll have moved on. Same. And, you know, I'm not saying you will have fixed everything in your life, but you will have built in some very good foundations and have some very good tools that you can use to move on in the future.
Right.
So it's reorganizing your life.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like to use is the life-work balance, not work-life balance. I always like to make that distinction between the two.
Mm-hmm. to prioritize what's
to prioritize what's important to you. Yeah, and I suppose I got that from my own daughter. My fourth child was born with a heart condition, so I learned to what's important in life now. Mm. What's really important here? It was in at that moment. It was her care. She was in Crumlin. We spent the last. We did 18 years in Crumlin, and now we're in the Mater. And it's, you know, family is important. At the end of the day, some people have said, "What do you want written on your tombstone?"
Yeah,
you know. And I say, well, love is the thing we take into this world, but love is the thing we take out as well when we go.
Right.
And that, to me, is the most important thing. Family. Family comes first. If I'm ever describing myself, I always go, I'm a mum, I'm a grandmother, and then I'm a psychologist.
Right.
It's not psychologist. I prefer the other way around.
Right. And that's, yeah, I suppose these are the roles that we play. But if you had to prioritise, as in, like they do in the Crystal Maze, if you have to prioritise... But you're a mother first and foremost.
Yes, a mother first and a grandmother first. Mm. And then the psychologist.
The rest of the pieces.
Yeah,
fall
but
into
I have
place
to put myself
it.
First. And that, I think people have a problem with putting themselves first. They feel guilty.
Right.
Get rid of the guilt. Please get rid of the guilt. It's okay to put yourself first. And the way I like to look at it is that first is like on the airplane when they say, put your oxygen mask on first and then help the person beside you.
Mm.
And that's what self-care, to me, self-care is about. Mm. Putting my oxygen mask on first, then I'm a better mum, then I'm a better grandmother, then I'm a better psychologist. I can help more people that way. I'm better for my business.
That's it, yeah. How can you help anyone if...
If I'm not doing my thing.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of sometimes I use the analogy of being the central pillar in a big top. If you are not strong and sturdy and able to hold up that big top.
Exactly.
Everybody that walks into your life or anything like that is just going to get caught into this.
In the avalanche that comes down on top and you collapse. Mm-hmm. And that can happen. So, yeah.
So let's get rid of that guilt.
Let's please get rid of the guilt. And if you need help, it takes a lot more courage to ask for help. It really
guilt
does.
Guilt is such an inward looking emotion. It really is. It's kind of like me, why me kind of...
It can be, but sometimes people aren't even conscious of that.
Mm.
They're not conscious that they're making themselves a victim, almost.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think they realise that they are doing it.
So what kind of language comes out in this kind of hidden victim mode? I mean, obviously the subconscious is always going to give you away, so...
Mm. Sometimes people are in so much denial that they don't even realise that they are doing the roles they are doing, particularly with a codependent. They won't know that they are doing it. It's when we become aware. I think Daniela touched on it last night, and I know she's touched on it before. It's that awareness, becoming into the awareness. And awareness sometimes can be a crisis point where you're suddenly exhausted, you have burnout, you've realised, or people are avoiding you because you're always moaning. The oh pity me and look at me, I need so much help and I do so much for everybody else. You know, there's an awful lot of anger, but sometimes that anger can be turned inwards and you become depressed.
Mm-hmm.
So it sometimes you don't realise that you've gone into these roles. We fall into these roles over the years. They take time to build up. Sometimes we're playing these roles from childhood. We are the carer in the family from childhood.
Mm.
So
is this then one of the great things about journaling is that you can actually read back on your own language. You can see how far you've come and you can also see where you want to go.
You can do that. I don't like to read back my journals. I do not like reading back what I've written, but for me, I use it in a different way. I use it at night to de-stress. It's a good de-stress tool.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to just sit down and you're it's not a dear diary. It's you start writing and within a few minutes, you're going to be writing everything. Even if you start making bullet points, mm-hmm. you will continue to journal until it all flows out of you. It gives your brain a break at mm-hmm. night. It enables you to sleep better. Getting a planner, a diary, and writing down, what do I have to do tomorrow? And also enables you to sleep better.
Mm.
And the big one is to have a not to do list. I love a not to do list. What is it on my list on my to-do list that really is somebody else's responsibility. And I think a lot of people, and most of us, I've been guilty of that, and I have to watch that. Am I taking on something that is somebody else's responsibility? Can I hand it back to them?
Great. Well, let's talk about boundaries and responsibilities right after this.
Okay.
We call them cool, those hearts that have no scars to show, the ones that never do let go and risk the tables being turned. We call them fools who have to dance within the flame, who chance the sorrow and the shame that always comes with getting burned. But you've got to be tough when consumed by desire, 'cause it's not enough just to stand outside the fire. We call them strong, those who can face this world alone, who seem to get by on their own, those who will never take the fall. We call them weak, who are unable to resist the slightest chance love might exist, and for that forsake it all. They're so hell-bent on giving, walking a wire, convinced it's not living if you stand outside the fire. Standing outside the fire. Standing outside the fire. Life is not tried, it is merely survived if you're standing outside the fire. There's this love that is burning deep in my soul, constantly yearning to get out of control, wanting to fly higher and higher. I can't abide standing outside the fire. Standing outside the fire. Standing outside the fire. Life is not tried, it is merely survived if you're standing outside the fire. Standing outside the fire. Standing outside the fire. Life is not tried, it is merely survived if you're standing outside the fire. Standing outside the fire. Life is not tried, it is merely survived if you're standing outside the fire.
This is Christy Moore for the Simon Community. Homelessness can happen to anyone.
I was married for 17 years. I had three children. Things were going great, and one morning I woke up and my wife was just dead, lying on the floor at the end of the bed, and kind of like accelerated from there.
At a time when the crisis has never been greater, Simon is there to help vulnerable and isolated people rebuild their lives. You can help. Support your local Simon community at simon.ie. And thank you.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back to Charity Radio. You can get us on Twitter at All Charity Radio. You can get us on Facebook, Twitter, Charity Radio. You can get us on the TuneIn app, Charity Radio. If you're listening, you may already know that. You can get us on the website live, www.charityradio.ie. Wibbly wobbly wonder. Now, in the studio with me, I have Deborah Byrne of DB Psychology Services, and we are talking about self-care. We are talking about what to do, but we're also talking about what to do, what not to do. And Deborah was talking about the to-do list, but the not-to-do list. And perhaps then we could just talk about maybe boundaries and tolerations and kind of your own responsibilities.
Yeah.
In self-care.
Boundaries, if you have had a traumatic childhood, can be very hard to establish without the help of a therapist. And boundaries, I think people can allow their boundaries to be skewed as well as they go through life. So the way I like to look at it is by using mindfulness or some form of relaxation technique, you can bring yourself back to center and you can start to listen to the voices in your head. So that allows you then to look at negative self-talk, but then it also allows you to rewrite those negative conversations and to identify whose voice is that really in your head. Is that really about you, or do you need to hand that back? And I think this goes a long way. If you can do that, if you can isolate those, you can go a long way to changing your boundaries. And to establishing boundaries in the first place. A lot of people, you know, sometimes they haven't got boundaries, such as codependence. They don't have boundaries. They're always looking after somebody else. So in order to get those boundaries, I find mindfulness, identifying the talk that's going through your head, identifying who they are, rewriting them. So again, journaling would come into this. I would use journaling. I would use gratitude and affirmations. I know people think they're pop psychology, but they are very, very good and they are very effective and they work. So mirror work is very good, very hard to do. Very, very hard to do mirror work, to actually look in a mirror and look yourself in the eye and tell yourself, I love you. To give yourself a pat on the back and to literally, you can't see me now, yeah, but I'm giving myself a pat on the back, a hug. You know, sometimes we need a hug, hug a pillow, hug a teddy. You know, it's okay to do that when we really need it, or because sometimes we can't ask another human being for those things. So to have those little techniques that we can start to introduce into our lives is a good thing.
Now, we're talking kind of here about habits. There's a great quote by William James, the American psychologist, and he said humans really are mere bundles of habits.
Yeah.
That we incorporate these habits, we run on autopilot, we use these shortcuts in order to...
Exactly, to survive.
To survive, yeah. But
to
nowadays
exist.
To be more productive, let's say, you know, in this bombardment of a world that we have.
Tough on parents, I think the social media... It's a tougher parenting world out there. We are, but that also means we can unlearn those habits. And that's what's important. It is possible to get better. It is possible to unlearn habits. It is possible to rewrite those voices in your head. It is possible to examine what is going on in your life and to hand back and to learn to hand back responsibilities. I think Melody Beattie's book, it's a very old book, but it is very, very good on codependency no more. It's a standard, I think, for codependency. Anybody going through the rooms of Al-Anon would have read it.
So when we're talking about developing new habits, nature abhors a vacuum. You can't just withdraw a habit and not have anything to replace it with.
Exactly.
So I presume, really, it's if we're looking at maybe like train tracks, that it is simply a matter of derailing the negative thoughts towards a more positive self-talk.
Sometimes it's not such obvious. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not such I'm going to cut that railway off here and I'm going to put the new railway down. It's slow. It can be very slow. It can be almost the same way as those negative thoughts got in your head in the first place. They seep in gradually. So with the positive, this is where the affirmations come in. This is where reminding yourself that with the positive self-talk, you have to practice it. And it takes time. And this is why I say about the book taking 12 months. It's to allow yourself that time, to allow yourself to build that better life for yourself.
And this manifests then biologically, I presume, with the neural pathways, neuroplasticity, that kind of stuff.
Exactly. So you're rewriting those pathways in your brain. It's wonderful. I mean, to think about it, that your brain can actually now be rewired. And think about it as the old, I don't know if people remember, but the old tapes where you could record over. But basically what you're doing is you're taking an old tape and you're rewriting it. You know, or the CDs, the newer CDs where people write to those CDs. Mm-hmm. It's not so simple as taking out the old CD or the old tape and then rewriting over them. Mm. It has to be done a little bit more gradually. It does take patience. It does take time. There's no magic wand.
No magic wand. So you've got to give yourself the space to make that journey. You've got to go, do you know what?
Yeah.
I'm not going to leap from base camp to the peak.
No, you're not.
By just putting springs on my feet or something.
No, you're not. I wish it was. I wish, I promise, I wish it was. There were times when I was doing my work. I did inner child work for a number of years for myself. And there were times when I thought, oh, this journey is so painful. It's more painful than what I'd been through. But at the end of the day, I wouldn't give up my serenity. I wouldn't give up my... how I feel now for anything in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I take my time off. It really helps with my serenity and my peace of mind. And it allows me to be, I feel a better mum, a better grandmother, a better psychologist for it.
So, I mean, we're looking at kind of mental emancipation, liberation, more energy. You're now freer. You're living outside the opinions of other people.
Exactly.
You're not boxing yourself in with what other people think.
Yeah, and kind of if you've learned, I think mindfulness is a very good tool for that. I think it allows you to slow down the thoughts and see them for thoughts and not be on automatic. Mm. It allows you then to correct those thoughts if they're wrong. It allows you to see whose voice it is, to hand it back to them, to see who you are taking responsibility for. Is it really your responsibility? Can I hand it back? It allows you to think outside the box. I mean, it's not the be all and end all with mindfulness, okay? There is a one thing I would say. If you are doing mindfulness, if you have suffered trauma in your life, please be very careful and do mindfulness with a trained therapist, because it will bring up past traumas. It's a very good tool. I'm not saying don't go to mindfulness classes, do, but be aware that mindfulness can bring up trapped trauma for people. So you might want to look at, you know, seeing a psychologist or a counsellor who is trained to deal with that trauma.
Right. When it starts coming back,
yes,
up for you.
Because
you'd be reliving the state as well. You'd be reliving the emotions. You'd be reliving.
You will. Flashbacks. Mm. And with a flashback, you are right back there, at, you know, in the moment. And you will need further techniques to help you cope in that moment. You know, to reorientate yourself. Now, I do self-soothing in the book. It's 6 weeks of self-soothing. And that is introducing new habits and using the senses to orientate yourself. You need to be able to reorientate yourself. Mm-hmm. So if I was in a room, I might, a stone, you might have a stone in your pocket. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people have the stones. I've seen stones with "this too shall pass," and they will be rubbing that when they're nervous, yeah, or anxious. They will use, there are techniques that you can use, but again, you need to access those services, particularly if you've had a trauma.
Right. Because you're right back there. Same part of the brain, reliving the
absolutely. It's as it happened. Mm. Exactly. It's flashbacks. It's as it happened. It could be a smell. It could be a vision. If you've had a car crash, and there was a lorry involved, the lorry's going by you, then may cause you to have a flashback, or you get very nervous, or you're very hyper aware, you could have trouble getting back in a car. You need help with that. You need to go and speak to a counsellor or therapist with that.
And I suppose the plus side of that is there is such a thing as post-traumatic growth.
There is, as I like to look at it, is going from the victim part, then into the survivor part. And some people get stuck in the survivor part. So it's to go to the thriver part. You know, move on. Don't stay in the anger. Don't stay in depression or whatever it is. You've got to move yourself on through the grief. You've got to move yourself on through to all the emotions and arrive into that survivor status. And that's where life gets a hell of a lot better.
So this, you're looking at reframing your stories the way that event took place,
yeah.
Or the way you perceived that event to take place. Okay, we'll be right back with more after this from Blur.
Every day, in one deep, delicious breath. I suppose I do it in gratitude. I do it for my family. I do it for the medical team. Because when you survive lung cancer, one deep breath tells you what's worth valuing. So know the signs and act early.
To know the early signs or symptoms of lung cancer, free phone the Irish Cancer Society on 1800 200 700.
Lung cancer. You can avoid it. And if you get it, you can survive it.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back to Charity Radio here. You are listening to Howard Hughes on the Empower Hour. In the studio with me this evening, I have Deborah Byrne from DB Psychology Services, and we are talking about self-care. And we're talking about self-care. We're talking about, you know, putting yourself first to restore your energy levels. You're talking about defining your environment in which you operate. Negative self-talk, also negative people with boundaries, defining your boundaries and what you're willing to tolerate from negative people. As you said, if it's family or if it's a co-worker, it can be a bit more difficult to deal with. But then you said your book has the kind of self-soothing and techniques to work along with that. Now, one of the points we talked about was an inventory, the mirror work, being honest with yourself. Now, that's great. So I've reached this learning curve. I have started to work, started to learn myself bit by bit. And I'm being honest. How is that going to impact on my decision making now? I'm talking about going from unmanifest to manifest. I'm looking now at what, improvements in my decision-making process?
You'd get improvements in your decision-making process, yes. One example would be with finances. I think I have a whole chapter on finance and honesty, and the word is honesty there first. And I use the example of finances because I suppose money is, I think, a major issue with people. It can be a major issue in relationships. And to be honest with yourself about that is so important as an adult, and taking responsibility as an adult for your own finances. Sometimes we don't do that if we have had bad boundaries or weak boundaries. And I like to tackle that by getting people to sit down and actually record where they're spending their money and look at it. And if they don't, if they're not in a relationship or they're not, then they have, get an accountability partner. Get somebody that will help you be accountable for where you're spending your money, what debts you have. And, you know, if you have a debt and you need to pay it back, well, you need to curtail your spending. Now, it's not as simple as that. I mean, you know, sometimes we have to go to MABS. We've had a very bad climate here in Ireland. Debts were run up, you know, sometimes through no fault of the people involved. So you have to be realistic. But it is, I feel, somewhere that we can look at the area of honesty is through finance.
Two things coming from me there.
Okay.
The first one was that I was talking with somebody recently about this when we all thought we had money.
Mm-hmm.
And really, pretty much for the first time in the state, there was money circulating and people didn't know how to handle it.
Okay,
really.
Can I cut in there?
Yeah.
Having worked down in the coalface.
Yeah.
My question to people would be around that. Why were the schools setting up breakfast clubs and after school clubs and feeding children? And sometimes those children, that was the only meal they were getting. And we were so-called Celtic Tiger era. Mm. They were having, yes, businesses were financing those and helping to sponsor them. And I'm not talking about low socioeconomic areas. I'm talking about a very mixed area, socioeconomics. And so for me, was there really money floating around during the Celtic Tiger?
There's a lot of credit floating around.
There was a lot of credit. I think there was a lot of pressure put on families to buy that house, to get a house, two people working, children, you know, I have some issues around this whole area of children walking home and latch door key kids arrived into Ireland at that point. I'm not saying mums should stay home. If they want to go out and work, fine. Dads want to go out or dads want to stay home, be dad, that's fine. I'm not saying they shouldn't.
Judgment, yeah.
But I'm not judging anybody there. It's always an individual choice. But was there really money floating around at that time?
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, there was a lot of credit being lent out on the fractional reserve banking system. There could be no doubt about that. And look, hands up, I was one of those people who I enjoyed the credit boom at that stage. Now, that's the first thing. Our relationship with money.
Yeah.
What are the lies we tell ourselves?
Oh.
If we're talking about honesty, what kind of lies do we tell
ourselves?
I
think people will do the obvious, don't open the letter, put it in the drawer, don't tell our partner what we're really in debt to.
Right.
I think we can go really down the rabbit hole when it comes to money, individually and in relationships. And just go into denial about where we are. And that is why I picked the topic of finance and honesty.
Is there a lot of social pressure to put up this facade of I'm really doing well?
I think there was in the Celtic Tiger. And I think that goes back to my first point about the house and the two cars and the holidays. I think that was the social pressure. I think it has gone because people realised there were so many people losing their homes and still losing their homes. I think I think that has eased off a little bit. I think people are realizing too, I'm not going to be liked by Facebook now, but that Facebook, people will put up what they want you to see on Facebook. They're not putting up the reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people have to be very mindful of that, that it's Facebook is can be seen as the keep up with the Joneses.
Right.
But, and it's not just Facebook, sorry, it's social media. It can be very much a case of keeping up with the Joneses. But it's not really, I think people are beginning to cop on that that is not reality anymore.
Is that a general thing, or is it just an age's wisdom type situation? Are we?
Perhaps it is. Or maybe I just have very sensible kids, which are a younger generation. One of them has two children. They live within their means. Mm. They self-finance. I think there is a lot of, they're quite good. I don't think they are, because all their friends are the same. They're good with money and looking after themselves, and they are responsible in so many ways. I think I've learned a lot from them myself.
So do you think this is a kind of a positive legacy of the
Celtic
the
tiger? The bust. Yeah, I think it is in a way. I know my girls nicknamed Pennies the recession busting shop when they wanted clothes.
Yeah.
So, you know, they knew they had to be practical. They got it. They got their budget and they had to be practical. Now, I don't think that they were alone in that. I think there is a younger generation that have lived through the bust and gone, oh, OK, we need to be a little bit more responsible than what has happened before.
Brilliant. Now, we are coming up to the top of the hour and the end of the show, I'm afraid. However, tips and techniques that you can start incorporating now that will benefit you as you move forward.
Okay, the first one I would say is plan time off. Every week, Sunday night or Monday morning, whenever you're doing your planner, schedule in some time off for yourself. Whether you're going to use that to spend time with your family, whether you're going to use that to go to the gym, whether you're going to use that just to meditate or put your feet up, read a book or watch that TV program. Do it. Please do it. Get your social media and all your phones and your TVs out of the bedroom. Okay, it's a bedroom. It's for sleep. Make sure there's no flashing lights or anything that's going to distract you from that. Just relax. A very simple technique for relaxing is either the 7-11, which is seven, count to seven and breathe in, and then exhale for 11. It's very important. I will put up on my social media tomorrow a TED talk in the morning about why that is so important, and it will demonstrate to you how it goes back to center and how important it is to bring yourself back to center every day. And to build that technique up. What else would I put in there? Self-talk, gratitude. If you can even write down one thing, if you can't think of three things that you're grateful for at the end of the day, I would just write down one thing. One thing is that, you know, I have a roof over my head, I'm breathing, my kids are okay, whatever it is, something simple. And build it from there up to about three things a night. I would also, if I could, I always have a journal beside the bed. I have a sticky notes that I can just, if I've forgotten to something into my diary, I will just write a quick note to myself. Oh, I forgot to put this on the shopping list. I forgot to put the milk or the bread, or I need to do this, that or the other. Write it down. It's out of my head. I can put it beside the bed. I know it's there tomorrow. Journal. I put down all the thoughts. I get rid of all the stuff out of my head, all the negative thoughts, all the good thoughts, everything out of my head. It allows your brain to take a break.
Mm.
Otherwise, when you go to sleep, the brain goes on automatic. It's processing, processing, processing. You want to give the brain the signal, calm down. It's okay to relax now.
I've got this.
I've got this.
I've got this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the brain, the automatic brain, the doing brain is, for most people, is what is in charge.
Mm.
Really what you want to do is get back to the wise brain and, you know, and say, okay, this is where you can step back, where you can take that step back and see the thoughts for what they really are.
Mm-hmm.
And you're able to relax a bit better, I promise.
Brilliant. Okay, well, Deborah, thank you very much for taking the time. I know you're a regular listener to the show, so thank you very much for actually being here.
You're welcome, and I loved it.
And safe travels. Are you down in Wexford tonight? Are you staying with?
No, I'm down back down to Wexford tonight. So I'll say good night, and I'll see you shortly, Laura. Okay. My daughter. I'm my Laura.
Okay, I'm going to leave you with this, and this is Herman's Hermits.
Woke up this morning feeling fine. There's something special on my mind. Last night I met a new girl in the neighborhood. Oh yeah. Something tells me I'm into something good.
Something tells me I'm into something.
She's the kind of girl who's not too shy.
She told me I could.